I'm Dimae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music by violinist Aaron Meyer from his Walk Don't Run CD. He has a full schedule of holiday concerts coming up, so find out more at aaronmeyer.com. Today we look at the classic allure of storytelling. First up, Portland Story Theater talks about their new solo series, Single Handedly. We'll hear from co-founder Lynn Duddy and guest artist Dennis Gessing. Then, in the latter part of the show, we'll hear about the enduring legacy of Thornton Wilder's Our Town. Director John Berenson tells us about Liminal's multimedia 2.0 version of this classic play. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dimae Roberts. With me in the studio are Lynn Duddy, co-founder of Portland Story Theater.
Hi, Dimae. How are you doing?
And artist in residence at Portland Story Theater and storyteller Dennis Gessing.
Howdy. Nice to be here.
Welcome both to Stage and Studio. It's great to have you here. Now, Portland Story Theater has a long track record of creating and presenting solo storytelling shows. And I wonder, Lynn, you know, where this passion for personal storytelling as a form of theater, where does that come from?
Well, I think it comes from my deep desire to really connect with people. And really, I believe that we're building a new community and a new way of communicating with one another that storytelling really lends itself to.
Well, yeah, you and co-founder Lawrence Howard, when did you start Portland Story Theater?
We started Portland Story Theater in 2004, but we didn't really start the personal narrative until about 2008.
What did it start off as?
Well, it really was the first form of single-handedly the solo series. Lawrence did his first iteration of Shackleton, which he's going to do again this
year. Ernest Shackleton, the explorer.
Right, exactly. And then the people that we were involved with, we each did a month, and we did a series of performances each month, each telling our personal stories.
You do a lot of shows during the year, don't you?
We do. We do one at least once a month. Right. We have Urban Tellers, super popular, short form, and it's designed for the every person. So what we believe is that everyone has a story to tell, and we do a workshop in the art of personal narrative, and then each month that workshop culminates in the showcase.
So is that where the crafting of the stories comes from, is in the workshops that
yes,
you offer?
Yes, the discovering and the crafting, so that it's not memorized, written down. It's not like that. It's just really understanding the structure of your story and really identifying what your story means to you.
Well, you say it's not memorized.
Right.
What do you mean by that? You mean like it's not word for word, but it is as far as the structure of it.
Exactly.
I mean, you have to rely on memory to tell these stories.
Right. You have to have a memory of where you're going in the story. But the thing that really drives it, we do intentional storytelling. The thing that really drives the story is the meaning to the person telling the story. So you hold that. And yes, you do have a course, a path that you're walking down. But things get memorized in a way that, you know, maybe like the first line you'll memorize, so you open with a bang. But from there on out, it's this interaction that's almost a dialogue with the people that are listening. And you may change the story a bit and emphasize different things each time you tell it. So it's a living, breathing thing.
It's kind of like the story that you always tell, like at social functions, right? I mean, people always ask me personal stories about myself, right?
Right,
you know,
right.
As far as where I was born and that kind of thing. And then you have this little narrative that you tell about, you know, how your parents met and that So basically, if you have that structure, it's different every single time.
Right.
But
and we try
it's
to
the same story, but
exactly.
It's different every single time.
And we try to delve a little deeper than just the kitchen table storytelling, really into finding, why are you telling this story now? Because often the person actually needs to hear the story as much as the people listening to the story.
So you have a lot of different ways of getting the personal narrative to be more universal.
Yes. We find that the more personal the story is, the more universal it becomes. That sounds like it shouldn't work that way, but it really does.
It makes sense to me. So give us some ideas of some of the types of themes you're developing as part of the featured stories that's happening at Single Handedly.
Well, at Single Handedly, we have three tellers. Of course, Dennis Gessing is our artist in residence. He's been working with us for a few weeks, developing and discovering his story. We also have two local tellers who have gone through the Urban Tellers program with us, Kriya Kaping, who will be talking about her adventures in Zambia. But her story is really about understanding the preciousness of life and taking care of yourself as you move through each day. Jeff Burke is going to be talking about crazy love, you know, the first love that you have that just changes you. It changes who you are and your whole pathway through the world. It's a really great story.
Well, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with Lynn Duddy and Dennis Gessing, who we'll be hearing from in a moment, about Single Handedly at Portland Story Theater, which runs for two nights only, November 22nd and 23rd, at Hip Bone Studio in Southeast Portland. So, Dennis, I want to bring you into this. How did you get associated with Portland Story Theater?
Probably through the National Storytelling Network. We're both subscribers, and there was a posting looking for an artist in residence. I had a piece that I'd been working on and wanted to try out, wanted to find the truth of the story. And so I applied, and here I are.
Here you are. Well, how did you two work together then as part of this performance with Portland Story Theater? And what does it mean to be an artist in residence for you?
For me, it means the opportunity to spend time with like-minded folks with the shared purpose, the shared purpose being communication beyond just conversation. And so to work together, it's basically a lot of talking. That's a lot of storytelling. And so the initial process was to do a download where I must have told an hour and a half worth of stories. And Lawrence and Lynn gleaned which nugget was I possibly overlooking. And we took that one and ran with it.
Well, you're a professional storyteller, and you're based in Castle Rock, Colorado. What is that like? What is Castle Rock like? What kind of town is it?
Well, let me put it this way. Portland is a refreshing oasis in the land of the conservative. There's not a tribe down there, if I may. I mean, my storytelling tribe is basically here in places like here.
So you're finding this to be more of a mecca for diversity for you.
I am so knocked out and wowed by the support that storytellers get here. I mean, this particular weekend, we have, you know, all sorts of things going on, and you just don't see that every place. And you really don't see the kind of audience participation that you get here. I was just knocked out last week at the Urban Tellers. I mean, you need a story, you need a teller, and you need listeners. And these listeners were so giving, you know, and it just cycled back to the tellers, and the tellers got better, and it was wonderful.
Well, the Urban Tellers being another Portland Story Theater performance that you just did.
Correct.
So how did you get started as a storyteller?
Well,
what brought you to the art form?
I had finished writing a young adult novel called Midnight and the Magical Prairie Schooner, and it was designed to empower 11-year-old girls, particularly 11-year-old deaf girls. And I started telling stories about that in the schools for Pioneer Day and one thing and another. And I thought, I want to do something a little bit more in-depth. So I just started telling stories. A lot of folk tales for a while, and then I wanted to get more into the personal story and started writing my own stories. And it's just kind of evolved from there.
Well, it's fascinating. So how long have you been doing this?
Oh, I would reckon probably close to 20 years now.
I love how you said, I would reckon. I love that. I don't hear that too often. Your motto is never let the truth get in the way of a good story. And what does that mean to you?
Well, I think we talk about truth with a capital T and truth with a small t. And you know, the facts can get in the way of a good story. So we kind of go around the facts. We don't subvert the truth, but the facts aren't that important to the truth of the story. The emotional truth, right.
The essence of the story, because often, you know, facts or factual storytelling can be kind of boring too.
Right.
You know, how it's also like too much information, TMI, too much information, right? So so you want to glean that. You want
right,
glean
and this
that.
Is one of the difficulties coming from a writing background. You fall in love with your words as you write them to be read, not to be orally told,
spoken.
And so then you have to go through and just start cutting out and get to the root of it.
Well, listen, I want to hear a story from you. And okay. I understand you have like a short one for us.
I do.
Okay. So tell us what it is. You want to introduce it?
This is part of the program I'm doing called Just Passing Through. And this particular section is in the opening section. What was I doing up here? How'd I get on the roof of the garage? What made me think this was a good idea? My little brother, that's who. He dared me. He wanted to see if his big brother really was invincible. So here I am, standing on the roof of the garage. 6 feet away is the oak tree. Down below, there must be 20, 30. Every kid in the neighborhood's down there, waiting to watch Superman fly. And like I say, I've never been up on the roof before, and I was a little shaky about that. But nevertheless, I came from a neighborhood of collective imaginations. Those kids were with me, especially with my costume. I told them that my blue jeans and sweatshirt were really Superman's blue tights, that my cape was not my mother's snow-white bath towel pinned behind me, but rather a bright red cape held on by who knows what. Oh, and most importantly, Superman's red trunks, which nobody ever questioned, but years later you'd wonder why he wore his trunks on the outside of his tights. Well, I didn't have red trunks. I had white, tidy-whitey big boy pants pulled up. And they were held there by Superman's utility belt, which in my case was my mother's gold lame dress belt. I had to be careful. Last time when we played cowboys and Indians, her high heels served as my cowboy boots. She never could wear those again. So now here I find myself, my knees are shaking, and I'm wondering, can I pull this off? I remember pulling off the hangman stunt. That was pretty cool. That was the day my mother looked up from doing her dishes and looked out to see her oldest son hanging by his neck from the clothesline, his feet dangling, just like I'd seen in every Western. She ran out, screaming like she'd heard the call of the banshee, the Celtic precursor of death, and there I was. And I was amazed to see how upset she was. After all, I was Superman. I was invincible. She was not impressed when I showed her how I used that rope to actually support myself under my arms and that the hangman's noose, which I was pretty proud of, just functioned for show. She was about ready to see if the thing really worked. She was so mad. But that was different. I wasn't on top of the roof now. I was having second thoughts about this, and my knees were kind of shaky, and my hands were kind of sweaty, but nevertheless, I put my hands on my hip as I'd seen Superman do, and was getting ready to go into the announcement when something that never happened to Superman happened to me. My cape flew over my head and blinded me. Down below, the kids started snickering. Kryptonite to Superman to hear other kids laugh at him. One kid, Johnny Trumbull, starts yelling, "Jump! Jump! Jump!" But my brother, my little brother Tim, he had become my Jimmy Olsen. And he shouted, "No! Fly! Fly! Fly!" Encouraged now, I stepped back further on the roof to get a really good running jump at it now. Squared my shoulders, threw back my cape, squared my shoulders, and announced, "Da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da." The rest of the kids picked it up. "Kellogg's The Greatest Name in Cereal presents The Adventures of Superman. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman. More powerful than a locomotive. Faster than a speeding bullet. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound." I bent my legs, I took forward, and leaped, I ran faster and faster, and then, arms extended, I flew.
Yay! That was Dennis Gessing performing a short story that he's going to be performing at Single Handedly. He's the artist in residence at Portland Story Theater, and you can see him November 22nd and November 23rd, two nights only. Dennis, would you just kind of deconstruct the story that you just told? I mean, was it real life?
Yes, it was.
Yeah?
Yes, it was, and I have the scar to prove it.
Yeah. So you actually did that?
I did.
So when you have a story like that, how do you craft that little nugget, you know, for yourself to tell it in a more dramatic way?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to find a little nugget, and you do that like looking at a microcosm. Instead of the whole big picture, you want to find just that one element that everybody can associate with, fear of flying, fear of falling. That kind of
again universal theme, right?
Yeah, and you can start real basically with just the physicality of it. What do you see, hear, smell, taste? What's going through your emotions at the time? And everybody has those emotions, and so you tap into it, and immediately it's like the old party line when you were a kid. You pick up the phone, there were three or four people on it then, back in the day when you had to dial up a phone. But it's like dialing into everybody's basic emotions, basic feelings.
Nice. Nicely put, too. Lynn, so in the time remaining, tell us about the other two performers in the show. I guess you did a little bit, but what are some of the themes that they'll be touching upon?
Well, I think it's interesting that invincibility has really kind of been a running theme in my mind as I listen to these stories. I mean, Kriya Kaping's story is really about defying the odds in Africa, and Jeff's is really about that internal battle that we do sometimes with love and disappointed love, disappointment in love, and how you think you can stand everything, you know, you feel invincible, and then you realize your humanness.
I love it. Portland Story Theater presents their new work solo series, Single Handedly. It's an event showcasing three personal storytellers. And Portland storytellers are Kriya Kaping, and
yes.
Jeff Burke. And they join artist in residence, Dennis Gessing, performing for two nights only. And Dennis, you're performing the same story.
Correct.
Each night.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be different each night.
It will be.
And he's performing with them Friday, November 22nd. And that's with Kriya Kaping. And on Saturday, November 3rd, with Jeff Burke. And all shows are at 8 p.m. at Hip Bone Studio, located at 1847 East Burnside in Portland. For more info, visit PortlandStoryTheater.com. And you can get all those links, photos, and more info on stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast of this interview. Lynn Duddy and Dennis Gessing, thanks so much for joining
me. Thanks for having me. Thanks, Dennis, for telling
that story.
Yes, thank
You're
you.
It's
Dina.
Great to have you here. Next up, we have Liminal Performance Group's John Berenson and their production of Our Town. Let's hear more music by Aaron Meyer. Thank you. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. With me via phone is Liminal's co-founder and director of Our Town, John Berenson. Hey there. Are you there?
Hello, Dee Mae. Hi, how are you?
Hey, how long has it been since Liminal's had a show?
Last year, 2012, we did Gertrude Stein in March, a little warehouse in Southeast. There,
that's right. But before that, you took kind of a break for a while, too, didn't you?
We did. We had, I guess, a hiatus, you want to call it, of about 4 years between The Theory of Love, which happened in 2008, and then Gertrude Stein in 2012. We had a time where Brian Markovitz, the genius founder of Liminal, went off to grad school, and then also Amanda Beckelheide, who was our movement director and still is doing great things on the East Coast. Both took off for other pursuits, and you know, we were all involved in things. Some of them we called Liminal and small projects, and some of them were personal projects. And we've all been satelliting around here in Portland, waiting for some momentum to gather back, and that's finally happening.
We're finding, you got the momentum going for Our Town by Thornton Wilder. It's an American classic, and it's often performed by high schools, colleges, community groups, and it's about a turn-of-the-century Grover's Corners, New Hampshire, and it's full of Americana and the relationships between two neighboring families, and it's also about the romance between the kids of those neighboring families who grow up and marry, and then it takes a dark turn in the last act with a graveyard scene. So it's got a lot of everything, and it's often performed because it's a large cast, and it just kind of talks to, I think, you know, an Americana that doesn't really exist, you know,
and maybe never really existed.
Really existed. I mean, what was your first experience with Our Town? Everybody has an Our Town story.
Sure, and you said so many provocative things there. I want to respond to them all, but you know, like everyone, I read it in high school. And then I never had contact with it again. I've never seen Our Town, never seen it performed, and only had a recollection that it was exactly like you say, kind of an Americana, maybe Norman Rockwell sort of beautiful picture of an ideal America. And as such, it came up in a conversation as a joke, as the last thing that Liminal Performance Group would be likely to perform, right? Because we do performance art and we do experimental, difficult German authors and things like that. I read it again. And the cast of 25 or 26, we whittled that down to about 10, and it turned out that the whole thing was much more experimental than I remembered. It is extremely experimentally written in its staging and in its play structure.
Oh, it really is. It didn't really have a set, and it was often, I did it, you know, with mime and very starkly done, and so it kind of breaks the fourth wall too in the last act the whole, I don't want to give it away, but just whole kind of supernatural aspect of the graveyard scene. And you're a great sound designer and music artist. I figured that goes into this multimedia vision, doesn't it? Your work with different media.
It really does. We were fortunate to have four amazing sound people working on this show, and of course I had an ear towards it as we went along, as I've transitioned from sound design and composition into directing more. But we had Jin Reinach and Nicholas Erickson doing the sound design proper, and then two composers, Jenna Lucy Crenshaw and Jesse Mejia, who's an electronic composer. And we did want to set off that the graveyard scene, which is pretty famously known, I guess, so it's not ruining anything, that it does end in a graveyard. And we wanted to have that have a sense of wonder and mystery to it, and also a timeless sense. So we chose a modern electronic composer to have the music for that, which set it off from the more we're using hymns and also banjo and fiddle for the living portions. And I think what we tried to do is we tried to turn the sentiment around. This typically, you mentioned that the graveyard is typically kind of sad, you know, a sad ending or a difficult ending or a dark ending. And I think Thornton Wilder really wanted to resist that. He writes into the text that the dead in the graveyard are to speak without a trace of lugubriousness. And of course, we all had to look that one up again. And it means sad. They're not supposed to be sitting in the graveyard sad about their death. They're actually just people who who happen to be in this stage of life. So in brief, what we tried to show was that life itself is kind of scary and kind of sad, and that whatever's coming afterwards, maybe there's a possibility to show that as something that's hopeful.
Well, now, the play's in three acts, and it can be quite long. Did you cut any of the script?
We did. We cut one part of one scene. It's the scene between the gravedigger and the city slicker who shows up, because it's just plain exposition.
I think everybody does that. I think everybody cuts that scene. So I have to say, I think this play will divide people. Maybe since you've opened last weekend and you haven't found that, but I think there will be those who will applaud this new approach to classic play, and then others who will think that it's a fantastic way to revamp it. What's usually overperformed, that's done quite a bit and has such a long history. But it may give pause to those who may not know what your version is like and say, "Oh no, not another production of Our Town."
So there's the danger that folks might not be interested to start with because they've seen it so many times, or it's hackneyed for some people, and again, the sentimental performances that some people give. Maybe people don't want that, or maybe people do want that, and they hear that an experimental company is doing Our Town, and they don't want it ruined, as it were. but the responses we've gotten so far from First Weekend, from both camps, really from the liminal base camp, which is used to maybe more out there stuff from us, and also from people who just showed up for Our Town, not knowing anything about liminal. We found that they, have ended up getting what they want out of it, too.
So you had some good response then.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Well, so there's a disclaimer that it's not recommended for ages 13 and over. Is there a reason for that?
The reason for that is we would have to call it PG-13.
Yeah.
We've shown, now, as you mentioned, there's some dark elements in the script, and we've not shied away from them, and we've also flirted with the possibility, some possibilities that aren't in the script. So we show social issues like a potential domestic violence, potential drug use. Obviously, Simon Stimson, who's one of the pivotal characters, is an alcoholic, and we're definitely not downplaying that. There is he's also being played as a gay man, so he's in the closet, and that is definitely affecting his quote-unquote troubles that he sees in his life. So we're definitely tackling head-on some social issues, and in a way that that might be slightly shocking to people who aren't ready.
John, we have to go, because we're running out of time, but it sounds very tantalizing. Let me get this info in. Liminal's Our Town by Thornton Wilder performs through December 1st, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m., and there's no show on Thanksgiving. All shows are at the Headwaters, located at 55 Northeast Farragut, and that's number 9, and that's you can get all that information at liminalgroup.org. or call them at 503-567-8309. And I have a pair of tickets to offer to the first person who comments on the Stage and Studio Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/stage_n_studio. That's facebook.com/stage_n_studio. Liminal's John Berenson, thank you for chatting with us.
Thank you so much.
You take care. Before we go today, I want to urge everyone to take a moment. Take a moment right now and think about donating funds to survivors of the Philippine typhoon. It killed nearly 3,000 people. And today, a news article came out that only one-third of people one-third of Americans are even aware and following the devastation that wrought. More than 4 million people who are in need of food, shelter, and water, and survivors are having a difficult time receiving much-needed medical aid. So locally, Mercy Corps International, I recommend them. You can go to mercycorps.org or redcross.org or doctorswithoutborders.org. And I just want to give a shout-out for that because it's so devastating and nothing like it really has happened to that area. That's it for this edition of Stage and Studio. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.